It's time once again for the William Hill Sports Show, live from the William Hill Sportsbook inside the Club Calneva. Here's your host, Kenny B.
All right, welcome to the William Hill Racing Sports Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. Kenny B., your usual host, could not be here today, so instead it's Josh Nagel filling in for him, and actually John Stevens, part of the usual cast of characters, also couldn't make it today. So at this point, it's myself and Tommy Thompson, who's been a regular for a while now. Before that was a fill-in contributor, so glad to have him here. Tommy, thanks for coming.
Oh, wouldn't miss it for the world.
We've got plenty of sports to run through, as most of you are probably aware. Yesterday was a historic sports day for many reasons, but set records for most overlapping sports in one day. Everything from MLS, WNBA, with the NFL kickoff and some college football. There was basically a taste of everything. And who would have thought when a few months ago we were dying to, we were watching the dart championships or ping pong, whatever, basically someone constituted a sport we could get our eyeballs on. And yesterday there's actually real sports all across the landscape, so that was great to see. And it will be a full weekend, including the official week one of the NFL season that did kick off last night with the Kansas City Chiefs and Houston Texans, with the full slate of week one games coming up this Sunday, along with assorted college football and everything else. And there's some NBA playoffs going on, and that keeps heating up too as we're moving right toward those conference finals. We'll go over a couple quick notes right here. The game in progress. I mean, so there's an NBA doubleheader today, potential closeout games on both ends. Right now we're taking a look at in the studio here on the screen of the Los Angeles Clippers and Denver Nuggets. It's looking like, the Clippers are very likely to wrap this one up tonight. Nuggets had a nice game, came back in game two and won. Honestly, I think I would have been stunned had they won more than two in the series. I think the Nuggets are a nice, younger team, but they were just, they were still missing some pretty key pieces. I feel like, going this far was probably their ceiling. You'd think they just wouldn't, as a lot of teams are going to struggle to have the personnel consistently to match the Clippers, and that's pretty much it. And the Clippers have run away with the last couple. And it looks similar trajectory to the other Western Conference series, right, with Lakers. Rockets. We're seeing the Rockets came out on fire, took that game one, similar to the Portland series. The Lakers have just since turned the tables, getting good play all the way around. And so the much-anticipated Lakers-Clippers series should be just around the bend here. But until we get there, we've got these games leading up to it. And right now, again, this game's in the first quarter. So if you have a William Hill mobile app, you could bet the in-game, you could bet the halftime, second half, all kinds of action to still be had on it. But before tip-off, I believe it was Clippers minus 8.5, and I don't have in front of me what the total was. We'll see if, who knows, maybe Denver could eventually hang in there. But that's the first game, and one that will still be going on by the time we get off the air here. In fact, that's part of the reason why we are on an hour earlier than scheduled, our usual routine, because ESPN Radio is going to bring you full coverage of Game 7 of Celtics-Raptors in the Eastern Conference. That's coming up tonight at 6:10 p.m. tip-off our time, so you can check that one out. And we'll give you the line on that one, which is Boston. This is, again, neutral court down in the Orlando bubble situation. We have the Boston Celtics are minus 3-point favorite against the Raptors, total of 204.5. And, Tommy, I was going to say it's kind of funny watching that series because I felt the same way. Yeah, pretty much with each increasing game, that this is the most lopsided 3-3 series I've ever seen. Like in every game, it felt like the Celtics were the better team. They established it early on, looked like it might be a sweep or close to it. We talked last week, Toronto hits that crazy shot with half a second left. And even still, it felt like, well, of course, that's a sweep avoidance game, but appears, probably likely end up being a bit of an aberration. Watch Boston just sort of reassert themselves. Everything should be all right. Well, sure enough, Boston comes back. The next one blows them out, and you're thinking, all right, they're on the cusp of it. They're going to get there. And somehow, Toronto just won't die. And I seriously thought in Game 6, for sure, it looked like Boston was focused and poised and everything else. And even though, the Raptors overcame a 12-point deficit early and came back and, taking it to the wire, I still got the feeling that, Boston's going to find a way to close it out here. Kemba Walker, somebody, Jason Tatum will make a play, and they'll squeak this one out. It ends up being this classic, double overtime, and here we are. And, Tommy, what do you think? The funny thing is, again, with winner take all on the table here, I feel like, everything you've seen tells you that it's prudent to just go ahead and you know, maybe pick Boston to finish this off in a series that went the max. It didn't necessarily have to. But with the Raptors and their, I just feel like that case can be made on both sides. With their now championship pedigree, with their history of resilience, I'm wondering if, you know, if Toronto's not the right play. I've been a little bit torn both ways. I feel like Boston will end up being the public heavy team, and maybe it's time to jump in on the Raptors.
I mean, I like the plus three. Obviously, a lot could change in the next hour and a half, 2 hours. If it goes up over four, I'll take the Raptors all day long. I think it's going to be a very close game. I also lean towards the over a little bit because I think we could see another, you know, one, two, you know, maybe three overtime game. There's so much heart in that Toronto team because, like you said, it could have easily been a sweep. I think this just goes to show why Nick Nurse gets Coach of the Year again, because what he's done after losing Kawhi and some other key pieces to have the team in the same position, it's amazing. I think Boston will win it, but for the value of taking, you know, a few points, I think it'll come down to the wire again.
Yeah, that's one of those things, too, where it's pretty rare in the NBA where just a three-point spot actually comes into play. You would think the underdog's either going to win outright. That's one of those things where obviously, you know, 3 points is one possession potentially, where, again, unlike, you know, the college game, even which played a bit of a slower pace. The point being, of course, it landing on one or two seems and really is unlikely, but in this game it really could. I would still rather have, if you have a chance basically to have the extra possession in your pocket, you might as well take it.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you just look at that, I mean, the first game, 102-99, 104-103. Then there was those two games that there was, you know, the one game that was a blowout, the other game was seven. But every other game has been by three. So I think, you know, it's all on the table. It's win or go home, or win or leave the bubble. I think it's going to be a real close played game, and that three is a key number.
For sure. And what do you think about it? It's funny, I'm checking the William Hill U.S. future odds right here as we speak on the William Hill app, and they, you know, they've already got some future odds going for, you know, who's going to win the conference or whatnot, and it appears that they more or less have, you know, projected if Heat Celtics emerges as the Eastern Conference Finals, pretty much close to dead even, you know, in the odds. It looks like the Heat are a -120 favorite. If that series ends up, you know, coming to fruition, I think everyone wants to see it as good as those teams have looked. Who do you favor, Miami or Boston?
I just think the way Miami's been playing, you want to go with the hot hand, I think. I'd probably take Miami.
Well, yeah, it should be an entertaining matchup, and we see Clippers, Lakers. And for one, what's funny now, it strikes me that it seems like the Clippers are sort of the trendy pick now, you know, with the Lakers showing some bouts of inconsistency or whatnot, and there's no doubt the Clippers have more depth. But I still believe when it comes right down to it, you know, LeBron, you know, he said before, yeah, he didn't go to all the, you know, hassle and sacrifice of everything of making the bubble work. You know, the only motivation was going down there was to win that championship, and what's going to go down is a really significant, bizarre year. But when you look back, I think, yeah, winning that title in these times is going to carry a certain weight to it. Of course, he's, you know, concerned with legacy and everything else, but I do think the bottom line is like, yeah, even though personnel-wise you'd get the Clippers the edge, I just feel like, if that mentality is there, and apparently the Lakers are sort of capable of turning it on when they need to, I guess my point being is in a playoff situation, I'm not betting against LeBron in terms of, I know his finals record is 3-6, but in terms of getting there, look at those Cavaliers teams that he dragged to the finals. It's crazy. Well, obviously when you took them off, you saw how that went. And basically the Cavs, when LeBron left the second time, they were basically unchanged with who they left there. It was, you know, whoever, you know, Kevin Love and a bunch of miscellaneous guys. He took that group to how many straight finals, right? And I just feel like in this sort of same thing, ultimately, not saying to go all the way with it, but for him to just get there, and I realize, you know, the other great closer of our time, Kawhi Leonard's on the other side and just joined the Clippers, and that obviously that's a big deal because he's the one who elevated the Raptors last year to their first ever championship. And so you know, I mean, there's a razor-thin difference between these teams, but, you know, when it comes right down to it, I would say I would back LeBron in this instance. I think the Lakers are going to get there.
I got a little future bet on the Clippers when we re-entered the bubble and started this whole thing out, so obviously that's where I'm going to lean, but you're right, and, I mean, this is – This is probably the most talent that LeBron's had this deep into the field, and that's no disrespect to those Heat teams, but the way Rondo's been playing in the playoffs for his entire career and as old as he is, and to come out and play the way he has been, and I think Anthony Davis is just, if he wants to take the game over, he can. I mean, he's the shining star. He's going to be the future of Los Angeles for a long time. And then LeBron, I love hating on him. I love, you know, talking garbage about him, and he'll never be Jordan. But the guy is, you can't compare him to really anybody because he's not Jordan. He's not Magic. He's his own person he's amazing from the age of 9 when he first started this, you know.
I also think that whole, you know, all-time, you know, debate or whatever is somewhat, you know, nothing more than just semantics. It's like a water cooler thing to, you know, have a conversation about. But you're right. I think, I mean, it's the ultimate, you know, apples to orange comparison. Like, first of all, between generations, you never know how something would or would not have translated, right? So when it talks, you know, you want to talk about just pure skill and talent-wise, whatever. Obviously, Jordan can't be denied on that front, and the 6-0 record in the NBA Finals. And yeah, he was the ultimate closer. With that determination and talent, and you'd say LeBron, well, by comparison, like, yeah, sometimes he's needed a little more help or not the, you know, the type to just be that alpha closer who's always going to decide to put the game in his own hands regardless. And you know what? But just because it looks a little bit different doesn't mean it's any less great, though, right? Because like I said, the same, look at those Cavaliers teams he's taken. Jordan's never had a team, you know, surrounding cast as bad as the one LeBron's have had. And taken to the, you know, promised land with, of course, just that one time, right? He had a second star, Kyrie Irving, and he wins it with, you know, Cleveland. And he did, you know, much was made about this thing when he first left to join the Heat. But I guess what you're getting at, so like I said, I'm not big on comparing, especially that particular debate, because when it comes to all-time greatest, I'm not sure it's either, you know, Jordan or LeBron. There's others, I think, that belong in there. But as it concerns him, you know, to me, the flip side is that, and also in terms of their pure skill, I mean, there's no doubt LeBron's also, he's the much better, you know, defender, passer, rebounder. He did all that way better than Jordan, so he doesn't necessarily, you know, get credit for just how well-rounded he is as a singular player. Jordan was probably, obviously, like we said, his strengths were he was the more gifted natural scorer and the leadership and everything. But I just think it's sort of a fruitless debate because at this point, like you said, LeBron straight to the NBA, it's hard to believe. You know, he's been in the NBA like 17 years and he's still only 35 because he went at age 18. So to see him grow and mature, and it's also worth noting that I think is a at least a component to the debate to the degree that you need to have one. He's also the more active, you know, humanitarian of the two. Now, up to and including the social issues that are going on now, people just don't even realize the stuff that guy's done. I just think it's underreported. You realize, have you heard about the school he's opened in Akron?
Yeah.
Which is unbelievable. He opened a school there with his own money that guarantees everyone who graduates their entire college tuition will be paid for. The guy's actually changing lives. As we know, Jordan is pretty famously ambivalent about social and other issues. It's like, yeah, it just wasn't his thing. He was a basketball player, wanted to keep his private life, his beliefs, whatever else, you know, just to himself. He was afraid of causing a stir. And either way, like if he came out and said, if he spoke on any topic and it bothered an advertiser or whatever, he just didn't want to affect the, you know, the cash flow from Nike and everyone else, Gatorade, and to each his own. That's great. But I just feel like what LeBron has done as a humanitarian is worth noting. In fact, I even remember a couple years back. This was crazy because this was in Boston. LeBron was on the Cavs at the time. And this made the rounds a little bit on social media, but I think probably not as much as it should have. Late in the game in Boston, they had a timeout, and they're doing a thing where, you know, they always have recognition of people at the game for various reasons. And there was a younger, developmentally disabled young man, I want to say about 12 or 13, and he was, you know, they brought him out on the court, but apparently he had just won some kind of event or was like the overall like MVP of some sort of Special Olympics get together or whatever. So they're recognizing him for that. So they show him up on, you know, they show the young kid in the wheelchair up on, you know, the scoreboard. They explain his story a little bit, you know, gets a round of applause, all that. Well, the game is just beginning to start right then. LeBron had started paying attention to what was going on in the Jumbotron. He's starting to listen to the story. You know, they break the huddle, and he runs over to the kid. You know, he's hugging him, giving him a high five. You know, ends up giving him his shoes after the game. It was a cool thing to see because, and to be clear, I don't think, you know, he's not the type who seeks recognition for that, but even everyone in that corner – You know, they're all wearing the Celtics jerseys. They're all Celtics fans, but they're all giving him, you know, standing ovation for doing that. Michael Jordan didn't do that sort of thing, period.
Yeah.
So to me, that type of thing matters. And so LeBron has an edge in many ways. And I don't know why it seems, and I know Ken's a, you know, LeBron hater for reasons I can't understand, but so when it comes right down, that's like, one, the debate's fruitless, but even, Tommy, at this point in time, I think let's compare him to his closest contemporary, that being Kawhi Leonard. It's obviously proven him to be a pretty bad bet to go against him too, but I just have that trust LeBron will take him there.
Yeah, and I was just going to get to your point of the other factor, I think, in this whole equation for LeBron being able to take that Laker team to the promised land is, this is the freshest LeBron's body and legs and everything has ever been this deep into the playoffs, period, because of the layoff, which I always, that was one of my hesitations to betting the Clippers on the futures bet, is because you take a healthy, rejuvenated, rested LeBron, he's going to elevate everybody around him and he's going to do what's needed. And I really think this, as much as we like the possibility of seeing that Heat-Celtics matchup, this battle of L.A. is going to be probably all time for a Western Conference Finals.
Yeah. I think it'll be fascinating, right? And no matter, you know, what combination we might find in the finals is just bound to be compelling, because I thought, even if, let's imagine it's Lakers-Celtics, so who would have thought, you know, this weird, you know, environment and the bubble structure or whatever, but the finals would be about as classic as you could get, a throwback Lakers-Celtics. I mean, that would just be awesome. But even if it ends up being, say, Lakers Heat, then it's LeBron against the team he first won, your franchise he first won a championship with. And then if it became, like, say, Clippers against anybody, well, it'd be the first time they've ever made it this far. So that's a story of itself. And does Kawhi then establish himself as the dominant?
He
could end up being a three-time finals MVP for three different teams. Never happened.
But what about the other flip side? What if the Raptors win today and then go on to beat the Heat, and it's Raptors-Clippers? One, I don't think anybody thought that would even conceivably happen coming out of the East with as good as the Bucks were. I know nobody really anticipated the Heat.
You know, good call. Coming this far. Raptors-Heat's a close series. That's not like guaranteed for, you know, Miami to win. So.
Yeah. So, I mean,
so yeah, again, good call with another potential combination. So there's just no combination possible that doesn't have its share of compelling story angles or whatever. And I'm looking forward to it. I just think no matter what, I feel like the NBA, the product's been better than I expected. I think they've done an amazing job with the technology and everything, the virtual fans and the way the commentators are structured and all of it. I think it's actually just been better. I think than just about anyone could have expected, because I remember even Adam Silver was saying before they restarted, it's like, hey, all we're really doing is just giving this a go. I remember him saying, I understand things that go awry and we might even have to, you know, bow out of this. We'll just see what happens. I think it's been more than they could have dreamed.
I was absolutely thinking about that today. The fact that, I know we're going to talk on this in the next segment, but about football, and even though college played last week, college football starting up, and the fact that when baseball started up, Buster Olney said there's a 5% chance that they finish the season. They're going to finish. NBA has gone through without a hitch. I mean, this has really been what we thought 2 months ago would be a struggle, has turned out to be really, really promising and just, it's great.
Yeah, and it's worth noting, like, so with the MLB, I think, like you mentioned, all those insiders, I think Tim Kirkjian, pretty much everybody, Jeff Passan, who covers, you know, baseball exclusively and closely, all felt the same way. They had all those dire predictions, but that wasn't after it started. That was even getting there.
Yeah.
And that 5% was, this is never going to happen because of the, you know, work stoppage impasse. Like, these guys are never going to come to an agreement.
And with the Marlins and the Cardinals I thought, oh, God, this is not going to happen. And knock on wood, it's been going pretty good. We still may see something, but we're getting so late in the season that once you get into the playoffs, they could say, okay, we're going to play all the games here. You know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, didn't they just announce that yesterday? Baseball has in place a bubble structure for the postseason, which makes sense because obviously their regular season, you know, in terms of all the setbacks, I mean, that didn't go quite as smoothly as, you know, they had hoped or the NBA. But anyhow, we're going to take our first commercial break here. We'll be back in just a few minutes on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Now, back to the William Hill Sports Show, live from the William Hill Sportsbook inside the Club Cal Neva.
All right, welcome back to the William Hill Sports Show, ESPN 94.5 FM. Again, Ken Bartler going to be here today, but it's Josh Nagle and Tommy Thompson taking you through the end of the week for sports betting purposes, and we will cover every game we can here. So in our first segment, we touched on a little bit on the NBA. So just a quick update. The Clippers are currently up 9 points, second quarter, 36-27 against the Denver Nuggets. Close out game in that one. The Clippers will move to the Western Conference Finals should they prevail. And the late game that you can still get action on at William Hill Sportsbook or on your app is Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Semifinals, neutral court, Boston Celtics -3 against the Toronto Raptors, defending NBA champions. At 6:10 p.m., tip-off is Celtics -3 with a total of 204.5. So that's your NBA action report. And, of course, just keep once these series are decided and the next ones are formed, just keep an eye on the app and the spreads will be up right away. So, Tommy, let's talk a little bit about college football. This is the full first weekend, per se, of it, and basically the makeshift form in which it's going to exist. Yeah, you know, we had a little bit of it last week. I thought it was kind of funny, like, you know, the very first game last Thursday night being Southern Miss and South Alabama in front of – it's interesting, right, because they allowed – it's one of those things where they allowed some crowd with a population, you know, restriction or whatnot, but I still think – at Southern Miss, God, it was in the neighborhood. I forget how many fans, but I think that 6,000 or 7,000 or whatever. But when they spread them out and then you see them and the game zooms in, you know, it doesn't look all that different. My point being is, but the weather was terrible there that night. You know, it was like cold and it was rainy and stuff. So to me, you know, as college football goes, even though the game itself wasn't far from a masterpiece, but to see the field and sort of the scattered crowd, I mean, it wasn't like unlike what you would expect, right, from Southern Miss and South Alabama on a Thursday night, a crowd that,
yeah,
you know, it's basically half there. It's like, yeah, that one's not going to, you know, bring out the max ticket capacity. And it's not unlike we see with those MAC games and everything else. It's just whatever. So the game itself didn't look entirely different until – I thought this was sort of funny. So a couple games here and there, and then we closed out the holiday week with that BYU-Navy game. And to me, now you want to talk about you know, a bizarre sight in the COVID era of sports. To see a college football game with seriously zero people in the stands, and they didn't do any of the artificial noise or whatever, like when they splice in fake crowd noise or whatnot. It was just sort of funny so to be watching college football when seriously all you could hear was the crashing of the pads and all the cheering. You know, it reminded me of like a high school football jamboree. It was like the first night, you know, and they all play yeah. each other or whatever. If you ever you watched or covered one from the sidelines and that's it. We're like, yeah, the only fans you have like are your teammates. I thought watching a college football game in that exact environment was a little bizarre. We've got a couple coming up this weekend, though, but for instance, tomorrow, well, Wake Forest is at Clemson. I should say it's the other way around. Clemson is at Wake.
Yeah.
And I heard, actually, they can't have any fans there, so we'll see if it's the same thing, although they've talked about the production will include probably some artificial crowd noise, some music, things like that, maybe some digital, you know, fans, which I've heard they plan on using you know, around college football. But it was just sort of funny because did you hear, I just read a story today where apparently Clemson – South Carolina had again has an allowable fan base to a certain capacity or whatnot. But I guess as recently as maybe last week, Dabo Swinney was asking Dave Clawson, the Wake Forest coach, if he was willing to flip the game from Wake Forest to at Clemson instead. So, one, they could get a handful of fans in there. And Dabo offered to split the gate with him 50-50. Clawson still said no. It's like, hey, I mean, I got to tell you, I don't blame him. It's like, yeah, if we're going to play Clemson in this situation, the number one team in the country, we're not doing all that and giving you home field advantage. It's like, yeah, they know they're probably getting housed regardless. It's like, even though we don't have fans in our stands, you know, it looks familiar. We're comfortable here. It's like, no, you're still coming here.
I think splitting the gate, worth it. You're still getting – you know, some revenue out of it. But I think playing in Wake Forest is, you don't have that home field advantage, but I think a better coach team, better talent, better skill players will adjust better to that because they'll hear things that, you know, a crowd noise will drown out. And even if it's 6,000, 10,000, 16,000 like last night in the NFL game, it's still going to affect you a little bit where if it's, like you said, the Pop Warner Jamboree, I think these overly talented, smart players are going to adjust a lot quicker, and that 33.5 point spread can get up there real quick, I feel.
Yeah, and what do you think? But you know, Wake Forest is historically they're better than people think. I mean, you got to realize, especially in the ACC, it's tough. That's like, it's similar to say Stanford in the Pac-12, how the academic requirements make it such that it's hard to find those that qualify and can play the sport. So it's pretty crazy, especially when Stanford gets good at football, which requires a lot of good players. Like, normally you get a, whatever, somehow land a couple 4-star recruits in basketball, you get them on the court, you're going to be competitive. It's hard to turn football around. Duke football has had the same thing. We realize Wake Forest is right along those lines. It's private university with rigid academic requirements. Like, how on earth, like, talent wise, it's not like they're gonna, you know, Trevor Lawrence is gonna pick them over, you know, Clemson to begin with. But if you, even if you could get someone on that level, then they have to pass the academics. So the fact that Clawson's been there, which, by the way, he's done that a lot of places. I think the guy's underrated. He started his head coaching career at Bowling Green, actually made that a somewhat coveted job by taking them to bowl games seemingly every year. What he's done at Wake, where they're pretty much, you know, bowl bound almost every year, it's just incredible, because they now, it's not unusual. You would think, well, Wake beat Florida State, stop the presses. They're doing that regularly. They're beating legit, you know, it's pretty much, and like anyone else, I mean, they're pretty much beating everyone but Clemson. So I say kudos to him with what he's pulled off. But Tommy, what do you think about, so that Navy-BYU game, one, did strike you as bizarre as it did me, just the way it looked and sounded? But secondly, one thing we're finding out here, and teams were, I'm curious about this in the NFL as well, which we can get to in a bit, but because I've heard this coming out of several programs, you know, pro and college alike, but the Navy had said, you know, their coach had mentioned, out of concern for everything, both the, you know, the possible spread of the virus and for the health of the players who hadn't had, you know, much in the way of structured practices and everything, that they basically did no live hitting until the game. Like, it was all basically, you know, pads with, you know, whatever, with, you know, red jerseys on top of them, like, just don't hit each other. It's one of those things that hold them up. So he basically said when the game action started, it was going to be the first live hitting his team had seen since they got back together. Needless to say, against BYU, that was fairly obvious.
I was just going to say.
So they were already outmatched. I was like, yeah, tackling was a bit of an issue here. And I've heard other teams say the same thing. I'm like, I wonder if you watched that game and said, you know what, let's go ahead. And I just said, one way or the other, if you're actually going to do this, not arguing for or against whether you should be playing, but if you're going to be playing, you might as well be hitting each other. And because it looks out the whole no contact thing until opening day is not the best idea.
Yeah. I mean, I understand putting the red jersey on your quarterback and your skill players to be like, don't hit them. But to go your entire, you know, 4-6 weeks, however long they had to, you know, get ready for this and evaluate talent and skill positions and everything, to not have any contact, that goes to show why it was a 55-3 score. I mean, I never had much faith in Navy anyways, but you'd think just the discipline of, you have to, you know, go through certain things to even be in the Navy and be a part of that. And I didn't think it was going to be that big of a score, of a spread. So
yeah, nor did I, but especially when you consider the game was basically a pick 'em. That one flipped. Navy actually started as a 1-point favorite, and it flipped to BYU, but still, right around pick 'em, there's no like huge line swing. It was more or less, yeah, thought to be kind of a toss-up. But, you know, it didn't surprise me, though, in that Navy, you know, lost a longtime starting quarterback, and they were, so you already knew they were going to have a fresh guy behind center. But plus, with BYU, like, you just know they tend to be older, they're more physical. You know, their team's 90% of their players going like those 2-year Mormon missions, whatever. So they got like 24, 25 year old men on their team, and there's a physical difference between that and, you know, your typical underclassmen on the other clubs. And the fact that this year in particular, they were, you know, believed to have one of the more experienced and depth-filled, you know, both lines of scrimmage in the country, offensive and defensive, with several NFL prospects on each side. So, but still a little surprising it got out of hand that early. But just a little, you know, a little taste of what college football looks like. And I got to say, you know, it wasn't quite the same as Louisville Notre Dame on this date, you know, last year with the full stadium and all that. But nonetheless, it was still there. You know, it was still college football, and then we still had a game on the Monday holiday. So Tommy, we've got a little bit of a fuller slate this weekend, going through the lines here as they appear live on the William Hill app. Curious if anything stands out to you. It's one of those deals where it's still sort of a makeshift. You know, Clemson, Wake, despite Clemson being a 33-point road favorite, that's sort of the main event that'll be, you know, the featured game on ESPN tomorrow night. There's a handful of other ones, though, across the landscape. So Notre Dame, who did sort of went from adopting a half ACC schedule to a full one this year so they can get in all their games. They're playing at home against Duke. They're a 20.5-point favorite. 53.5 is the total. And I got to say, I just think this this particular spread seems right, because Notre Dame's had their way with Duke lately. And, yeah, that's a lot of points, though.
I The game that kind of stands out to me is the North Carolina-Syracuse game.
Which, by the way, is the earliest one on board. So
yeah. I really like what Mac Brown's brought back to North Carolina. I didn't think that he would turn that program around so rapidly. But
I agree, because it looked like he was left a mess by Larry Fedora.
Yeah.
And they were competitive instantly. They were very impressive last year.
And that goes to show how important coaching is at any level. But Syracuse actually has been pretty disappointing, you know, as of late as well. And I just think that 23 points, no fans, no anything, I think that could do, that could be a 35-40 point spread real quick.
Yeah, it's one of those things, though, right, with backing a favorite that's so big where that spread's going to be vulnerable pretty much till the end of the game unless, you know, they get up 50-odd points or whatnot. But yeah, that's tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. kickoff. Our time, North Carolina minus 23 against Syracuse with a total of 65, which just shows they didn't expect Syracuse's defense to make much of an improvement. That's a massive total, even if it's not in the dome or whatever, because North Carolina is expected to put up some points, and their quarterback is actually, Sam Howell. He was a true freshman last year, put up some huge numbers, and he's sort of a Heisman dark horse, which leads me to a whole other conversation. Like, do we award the Heisman this year versus half the field? But Tommy, so there's some other ones, and let's face it. So with the ACC being full strength and the SEC and all the other ones holding off for a couple more weeks, those are the ones that jump out at you as most attractive. But you got another one. You have Georgia Tech visiting Florida State. You know, Florida State again in a state of transition, after firing the coach Willie Taggart, and they landed Mike Norvell by way of Memphis, and he had some issues with his players early on. The communication makes you wonder if there's a trust issue there. In fact, I had heard speculation at the time that he might not last long because he's already made an impression where a lot of the players aren't real high on him if there's a trust issue.
Yeah, I read when that all went down that there was kind of a mutiny aboard and they were talking about maybe relieving him of the position then. But I think maybe the fact that they decided to play a schedule this year might have factored into who are they going to get at this point of the game. So let him play a season, go from there.
Yeah, plus you can't afford another buyout. They just fired a guy with a lot of money left on his contract. I mean, you can't just be right. I don't think you could have fired the guy before he coached the game unless it was just something clearly unforgivable. But, again, to give out the info here, it's Florida State at home at a 12:30 kickoff time on our time. So against Georgia Tech, 12.5-point favorite, total of 51.5. And you might remember, I think it's curious how Georgia Tech will look too, because similarly people realize Georgia Tech – tough academic institution. It's almost crazy how competitive they've been in football all these years, but it's also sort of explains, the triple option thing, because like Navy and the other ones, it's what you do to make up a talent gap when you exist where your main rivals are always going to have more resources, more five-star athletes. It's one of those things that's impossible to defend when you face it once a year, so they've been pretty successful with that. But they're going back to kind of a pro style, because you might remember they finally made a coaching change before last year, and they picked up Jeff Collins, who had been at Temple. He's more of an old school, kind of pro style approach type of guy. So of course Georgia Tech was pretty dreadful last year as they tried to they had players recruited for the previous system that they were no longer running. It was going to take a while for him to get his own roster developed and style of play implemented, and they ended up being all right in a couple games. But so you might expect that type of team in year two to take a bit of a step forward, and Georgia Tech is historically kind of a thorn for Florida State. And Tommy, what I'm getting at is you're right, but who knows where the state of the relationship is in terms of Florida State players and their coach. But with everything we've heard in the history here, and Georgia Tech usually being kind of sneaky annoying for better opponents in the ACC, I like the points on this one.
Yeah, I'm probably not even going to touch that game. The 12:30 game that I was looking forward to is going to be the Army game. Army looked really, really good last week, way better than I anticipated. And they're playing University of Louisiana Monroe.
Lafayette.
Monroe.
No, they're both in action. I saw the wrong one.
But I think that should be another kind of walk in the park like Army had last week. I don't know if it'll be a shutout, but I think they'll cover the,
21.5. 22 with a total of 54 right now. So, yeah, it's worth keeping an eye on. Like I said, with Army, I actually figured they would have their way with Middle Tennessee just because Middle Tennessee's finesse, soft team that can't tackle. So that didn't surprise me at all, but we'll see as this goes on if the Army numbers get out of hand. But so, again, just a quick review of college football. You know, there's a handful of games. A couple might be worth checking out. Most of the ones we previously mentioned, but a quick recap. North Carolina, Syracuse, 9 a.m. tomorrow. North Carolina minus 23, total 65.5. Other games of note, the Duke at Notre Dame at 11:30 a.m. kickoff our time. Notre Dame minus 20.5, total 53.5. Florida State, Georgia Tech, also 12:30. Florida State minus 12.5, total of 51.5. And the big primetime Saturday night game, number one ranked Clemson, defending national champion, minus 34 points at Wake Forest, total of 60.5. So that's pretty much our wrap on college football. We'll be back with more sports just a few minutes. Join us again on the William Hill Show, ESPN 94.5 FM.
Now back to the William Hill Sports Show, live from the William Hill Sportsbook inside the Club Cal Neva.
All right, welcome back to the William Hill Sports Show, ESPN 94.5 FM. And Josh Nagel, Tommy Thompson with you. So we give you a little preview of the betting action of this weekend's sporting events. And Tommy, let's go over a little bit. So we talk about how, you know, how these sports look in the new, you know, environments and challenges basically presented by the pandemic era. And you mentioned last night's NFL game was kind of interesting because that was the first one. I think that that also came with a lot of anticipation because it was so bizarre how we talk about on a yearly basis where it seems like, you know, people tire of the preseason. It feels like it never ends. You get pumped up when you see that Hall of Fame game and then realize there's like a month's more worth of just exhibition games or whatever. But nonetheless, you're in the loop. You're like, oh, wow, this rookie's looking good. This free agent, you know, you see some clips and you hear about who's making what team. At this point in time, it's just so bizarre because everyone still had to do that. I didn't realize until I saw some information last night just how short of a schedule they're on, because you realize everything was canceled in terms of OTAs that are huge for pro football teams, organized team activities, mini camps. None of that happened. So they weren't even allowed to take the field until about a month ago. It was like, seriously, from the word go, I think they opened practice, I want to say August 13th or 15th. And it was just like, okay, show up and then do your thing for a few weeks, get ready, and then just play on Sunday. It makes you wonder, in my mind, is the overall, you know, quality going to take a hit? But to me, I also missed out on just the stuff I alluded to, where like finding out how, you know, oh, undrafted rookies were impressing here. This veteran was unexpectedly cut. That information can still be found, but you know what you have to do is basically follow a team closely. Like when it just used to be so much out there because those exhibition games are on and everything. Without those, what you basically have to do is follow a local team's like trusted media or whatever. So whoever covers
Twitter,
the Jaguars
Twitter
the best,
or, yeah.
Right? You go and find that. Oh, so that's who they got, and that's who they're cutting, and that's what the, you know, local media thinks about the team. But that's fine. But you actually have to do that work because, you know, it used to be the info sort of came to you. If pro football, just no shortage of it. So much gambling and, you know, DFS stuff that just the you know, wealth of information is out there on the informational, you know, highway of the internet. And it's all usually pretty easy to find, but it's just kind of funny how, you know, you never thought an NFL season would seriously like sneak up on you, but it has because we just know nothing about it. So we're wondering last night, well, what's this going to look like? So you got the Chiefs, of course, coming off first Super Bowl in 60 years and just a loaded team against a team who they saw in last year's playoffs historically giving them some trouble. And I feel like, Tommy, to me, it was similar to that first college football game in that, you know, the stands, of course, not what you're used to in Kansas City, but they existed. There was enough of them to make it feel like it was a fan-attended thing. And the football, I want to say for – as far as I'm concerned, you know, I want to say I feel like it probably looked a little sharper and better than I anticipated.
It was a lot better than I anticipated. And I was going to touch base on that when we're talking about the BYU game because it was that first drive, and I remember thinking to myself, they must be piping in some crowd noise. And right when I think that, Al Michaels says, and just so you know, we're not – there's no artificial noise. This is all 17,000 fans making all this noise. And for being as spread out as they were very loud. But you're right. The quality of play, obviously being the Niner fan on the panel, I was disappointed that the Chiefs won the Super Bowl. They look like they are just right back there. Granted, you know, it was a Texans team that, you know, lost a little bit in terms of, you know, competitiveness by losing their best receiver, which probably took some of the morale down. But
which
they
was
just
a pretty obvious loss on the field, by the way, right?
Yeah.
Realize you talked about the Texans. What was their thing? Their home run hitter was Hopkins. How many times over the past few years did you see, you know, plays where Watson scrambling around, it breaks down, or whatever, he heaves one down the field, and it's always Hopkins on the receiving end of that and making the catch.
And Will Fuller's only going to be able to do so much.
Yeah, he's okay.
Yeah.
They have a few guys that could just be possession type guys. Brandon Cooks.
You know, yep. But
who didn't play. But
It still, the quality of play for not seeing any of these guys in action, not having that physical against another team, it's just offense, defense, scrimmages, really looked good. And it actually inspired more like excitement for Sunday's games, which is kind of hard to do because it's the first real games and everybody's excited. But right. I thought it was going to be a really poor quality games for the first couple weeks.
No, I agree. I thought the quality of play was better than expected. I mean, the Chiefs, you know, it's funny. What do you think about what I mentioned last week, though, with a guy like Damian Williams? Now he's really screwed. So the guy went from arguably Super Bowl MVP, and they signed him to a new contract. He's a great player. But to me, that's one of those out of sight, out of mind. He opted out, which, again, you can't blame somebody for, you know, having concerns. And I think he had family members that need to be tended to, that type of thing. So, you know, anyone who did the opt-out thing, I think, deserves that decision to be respected. But how terrible is it? They drafted somebody at your position in the first round, and then you're sitting at home as a guy makes his NFL debut, goes for 130-something yards and two touchdowns. And you're thinking, well, Damian Williams, the good news is free agency, you know, next year his services will still be coveted because he'll have no wear and tear from this year.
Yeah, he'll still be fine. But, I mean, how amazing for that kid to just step in to that role and perform on Monday night. That was the first time a rookie running back rushed for over 100 yards from a Super Bowl champion on their first game.
Right, because, so. Only because probably most teams that won the Super Bowl the prior year didn't make a change at that position.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. But so what do you think? So again, let's talk about a few of the details of the game without going overboard on the old recap. But the Chiefs, remember, they opened up as like 10.5-point favorites, which then got bet down to about 9 in most places, including William Hill. I believe that was their closing number. So there's obvious, you know, what you call the sharp money on the Texans, thinking, hey, they won at Arrowhead last year and even competed well in the playoff game before falling apart. And the thought being like, you know, that's just a lot of points to give up for a good team. So you might as well take it. I think I mentioned I jumped in with a little bit on the other side, just sort of out of principle, thinking the same thing, sort of the game trajectory, the way it went, feeling like the Chiefs, I would probably pull ahead. And I don't, you know, fading them just at your own peril now. It's like one of those things you probably don't want to get in front of them too often if not needed. So, yeah, so the Chiefs closed -9 with a total of about 54.5, and this is interesting because if you were to take the under, I mean, that's where the total hovered around, that 54.5 hook was there. So if you got the under early, then you won. But that was also a flat. There was some money in the under because I think poor play and your weather was factored into it. So it did close at a flat 54 some outlet. So you either got a push on the total or you lost by half a point depending on what side you're on. If you took the over, either push or lost, under either won or push. So it's funny that one landed right there. You know, the odds makers always seeming to be dialed in on these things from an early juncture. Tommy, but what did you think about the way the game played out itself? To me, like I said, there was no real surprises with how it went, but as it ultimately goes, the Chiefs got way ahead of the number, but the Texans made it respectable. So even if you're hanging on by a thread with those 10 points, well, they gave you a sweat for it. It didn't work out. The Chiefs' late field goal kind of sealing the margin of victory there. But, basically, if you say you did a teaser or whatnot, I mean, you still had a sweat with Houston.
Yeah, I mean, one of the first drives on the second half when Watson threw that interception, I think that if that doesn't go through, they go down, they score a touchdown. I think anybody who took the Texans with that +9.5, or if you were able to get it early with 10.5, you're sitting pretty. But it changes everything because now it allows the Chiefs to run the ball more and drain that clock out and puts more pressure on Watson because, I mean, he fought well. He scrambled out of a few different sacks, got sacked a few times. But, I mean, it's good. And I was thinking about that last night too, how it just fell right on that 54, and you were hooked one way or the other. I think it ended at 53.5.
Yeah, in some places, right. I mean, there was like pretty heavy money on the under, so I think that was also a possibility. But again, it just depends on what, you know, book you're doing business with, what number you happen to cash. But both sides in total reasonably close to landing on, you know, the closing numbers there. So Chiefs, again, first Super Bowl victory in 60 years. They're coming, you know, out of that and come out strong with a week one victory, 34-20. And we'll see how. But it's kind of funny, Tommy, how that experience might be a little bit misleading, because you mentioned, I felt the same way with all the fans and stuff. It just reminded me of like sort of a sparsely attended game, but they're fired up. It sort of looked like the, you know, real NFL. But I am funny, you know, it's curious to see how it looks when we're on the other side of that, because there's very many stadiums across the country where it's looking like no fans, at least for the early going, perhaps for the whole year. So now I want to see one where there's no, you know, none at all. That'll be the real challenge, you know. But I've heard they might do things with digital fans and fake noise, but you would think from a production standpoint they would almost have to. Just like they have the NBA, it's like, yeah, we can't just show an empty gym with, you know, the digital fans and, you know, fake whatever spliced in chants and stuff. The NFL is going to have to do that.
As a fan watching it on TV, you know, obviously none of us are paying attention to anybody in the stands for the enjoyment of the game, but I think it'll be weird if it sounds like that BYU game where you just hear the pads and the helmets clacking and the whistles and everything. I think you would have to, like you said, for production value, pipe in something. And I also think from a player standpoint, like, they should pipe stuff into the stadium just so that you're used to that energy and that atmosphere. I know Seattle is notorious for allegedly piping in the extra crowd noise to make it so loud. So, and I know there's a way to do it.
Right. Well, on the note, last chance notice, by the way, for the Pick the Pros William Hill contest, they take the entries all the way through tomorrow, but they actually don't accept them on Sunday because they're busy taking bets on the game. So if you want to take part in that contest, $25, get to William Hill tonight or tomorrow and get signed up for that contest with an overlay this year. We're going to go off to a quick traffic update. We'll be right back on ESPN 94.5 FM.
Now back to the William Hill Sports Show, live from the William Hill Sportsbook inside the Club Cal Neva.
All right, welcome back to the William Hill Sports Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. Again, it's Josh Nagel and Tommy Thompson with you. Kenny B could not be here today, but in his absence, we're still going to run you through the first full week of the NFL. And if you wanted to see what Ken likes, you know, he's got that Facebook page going, Kenny B's Sports Handicapping Show. Probably see the picks posted there if that's something that info you're looking to find. In the meantime, we will go over what we've got in every game. And it's worth noting, and William Hill likes to run these promotions, get people involved, and we just saw a coupon here. Man, this is just a sweet deal. You can't go wrong with that type of matching account funds. If you haven't opened an account yet, when you sign up, you could put $50 on your account, and William Hill will match it. So it's $50, and they throw in another $50. And that's just amazing because it's like, even if you're a real casual bettor with $5 each, well, now guess what? You got 20 bets in front of you instead of 10. You know, you put that $50 in, and you know, who knows? Maybe you build it up and maybe you don't. But even if you're just small-time action, that's a pretty sweet thing to get for no cost at all. And, Tommy, if you just wanted some implied value, but basically you could put the whole 100 on a parlay and know that you're only in for half of it. So,
well, it's funny that you mention it because we're watching the playoff game right here, and the William Hill commercial just popped up, and they're running on their ESPN commercial a NBA 20 promo is going to give you a $20 bonus. So if you just do this William Hill $50 bonus, you're getting netting an extra $30. But
right. Well, by the way, yeah, you have to use the promo code GET50, and it's looking like one of those things where you got to scan it with your phone. You know, the whatever it's called, QR code, you scan it, and then the thing will pop up, and I'm willing to bet. I already have an account, so I don't need to do that.
Yeah, it's only for... Bet,
you're right, they'll make the app pop up and install on your phone, and then once they know you've done it and you put in the GET50 code,
that's
when they match it.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you bet ever, it's important to have. As an example, last night, I was on the wrong side of the game. I took the Texans. However, I was able to get the Texans plus 21.5 on an in-play bet to recoup my losses for what I had previously had. So,
all right.
It's great.
Let's run through some of the week one games because there are some, you know, fairly entertaining matchups. Going to jump off the schedule here. And we'll give you the insight we've got. First one here is Minnesota Vikings, your key NFC North matchup right out of the gate. Minnesota Vikings at home against the Green Bay Packers, and the Vikings are 2.5-point favorites, over-under, total of 45. Tommy, everything I hear, you know, but you get this every year on the Vikings. Oh, this is the year they're going to really break out. And sometimes you think it's believable, and it's funny because last year they sort of underachieved. They didn't do that well in the regular season, yet they still sprung that upset down there in New Orleans and you know, got a little further than a lot of people imagine. Of course, the next week they're routed by the 49ers. But you know, they just seem like one of those teams where kind of a trendy pick every year to get over the top. The Packers, who were in the NFC Championship game last year, you know, much was made, of course, how they drafted Jordan Rodgers, maybe the down-the-road heir apparent to Aaron Rodgers. I should say Jordan Love. Jordan Rodgers is Aaron's brother. Jordan Love out of Utah State, but still nonetheless moved up in the first round when you've got a franchise quarterback with still probably 3 to 5 years left in the tank on your roster. Seemed like a bit of a bizarre pick and a stretch maybe at that. And, of course, there's some, you know, the dialogue about how Rodgers reacted to it or whatnot. But I guess what I'm saying is even in making that pick, it didn't appear like the Packers addressed some clear areas of need in other, you know, departments. I mean, geez, they, you know, some defense, and they could use a few more playmakers on the outside. And that's one thing they didn't do is improve the receiving core, which is not very deep at all. So, you know, it's a tough one. Again, it's Vikings inside of a field goal. Yeah, I think if it, one way or another, I'd probably take Minnesota, but I'm not super confident in it.
Well, it goes to the, you know, home field advantage gets you a field goal. So they're saying on a neutral field, it's a push.
But are they even factoring that in with no fans?
That I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either.
If you're going to break it down that way, even with the lack of skilled position players and the janky offensive line, I'm going to go with the better quarterback. I'm probably going to play this game as one of my top five plays of the week, and I'm going to go with the Packers. Ken actually texts me his picks, and he is – on the other side, he's all on the Vikings. So, right. I always kind of like when we're all different.
Why do you like Green Bay in this one?
I just take the better quarterback. Give Aaron Rodgers, you know, inside in a dome where he doesn't have to worry about the, you know, the weather or the. I know last year they had some turf issues, weather related, outside at Lambeau. But I have more faith in Aaron Rodgers than I will ever have in Kirk Cousins.
That's true. But Kirk might have the better supporting cast, so it's an interesting, you know, dynamic there. We'll see. All right, so next game on deck, Indianapolis Colts -8 points on the road against the Jacksonville Jaguars, so they're +8 with a total of 45. You know, it's weird. I think all the Phillip Rivers, you know, hype, I just don't want to hear it anymore. Like, I don't think the Colts are going to be that great. They're getting a lot of hype, though, but who knows? I could be proven wrong. But I just don't think they're going to, you know, necessarily get a huge upgrade behind center with Rivers there. I think he's pretty much done. They've got some decent pieces, though, around him. At the Jags, it's looking like, you know, tanking for Trevor or whatever you want to call it. Looks like it's in full bloom because it looks like they're going to be pretty bad this year, and they've, you know, traded some players. You know what I'm curious about, Tommy? So they went ahead and got rid of Leonard Fournette, which I still won't get because you remember a couple years ago when they're in the AFC Championship game and he was a factor. The guy was the focal point of their offense. He was tough to take down. I don't really think he's lost, and he was pretty effective last year. So why'd they soured on him or vice versa? I'm not really sure why you want to move on from him. But did you hear they're going to start a kid I had never even heard of, like basically he's undrafted rookie free agent, I believe, from Southern Illinois. And I don't even remember his name right now. I think it's Johnson or some common name. But what's funny is I was trying to build, you know, some football, some fantasy rosters today, thinking, you know, those are the type of guys you could usually get on the cheap. And someone who you know will be the primary back is probably, you know, get you some free points for a cheap price or whatever. I didn't even see him on any of the fantasy rosters, so I don't know. But they've announced this guy will be starting. Do you know who I'm speaking
of? I have no clue. I was just looking it up right now because this – I was thinking about it. I don't even know who their backfield is. But in terms of betting the game, they're as bad as Jacksonville is going to be this year –
His name's James Robinson. Yeah, the rookie.
There's no way I could lay 8 points on the road with – I think maybe the philosophy with Phillip Rivers is in San Diego, he didn't have an offensive line the last couple of years. They had the worst. And the Indianapolis offensive line was pretty impressive last year, actually for the last 3 years. And so maybe that's what they're going off of. But I just like not trusting Kirk Cousins, I don't trust Phillip Rivers. And so eight points, too much.
Yeah, I would agree, except the Jags probably will be awful. So to me, that's just a clear pass. But let's go to the next game here. Probably have some regional interest because that is the Las Vegas, formerly Oakland, and Los Angeles Raiders. Last year in Oakland, wrapped it up, and they actually did. That's another thing that's just going to – just seems surreal because it catches so off guard, the fact that this actually happened, and they're no longer based in the Bay Area, and they will be playing their home games at Allegiant Stadium and brand-new facility that – well, it remains to be seen if real fans get to experience this year or just a handful of whatever, staff and commentators or whatever else. But this is pretty interesting, Tommy, because I thought, again, this is one that's seen some flips, though, because when the lines first came out and hit the board on this, it was Panthers like -1, 1.5. Realized they cleaned house, right? No more Ron Rivera. They hired Matt Rhule of Baylor, which has no head coaching experience in the NFL, but he has been a coordinator here and there. So it's not as if he's just a college guy coming up. He spent some years in the NFL, so he knows how the business works. But his stock was really high because he turned Baylor around in a heartbeat. So it's curious to see how he does. Ron Rivera, as we know, Cam Newton's gone. They picked up Teddy Bridgewater. And the big thing they did to at least, I think, remain competitive in the near future was sign Christian McCaffrey, which I thought was smart, even with the whole thing of not spending – a lot on running backs becoming the trend. I thought if there's one guy in the league who you would, it's him. He was all they had last year. I remember the quarterback position was falling apart. They ended up starting whatever, Will Greer, and they had, just generally speaking, poor play once Cam Newton went down and McCaffrey. And it's one of those things, too, especially when the other team knows, he's their only real threat as a playmaker, how much he's going to touch it, and he was still that effective. I just felt like he played out of his mind. So I feel like he'll probably still be the best player on the field. But with all that, the Panthers opening up as a slight favorite. It's since flipped. It's now Raiders -3 with a total of 47.5. Again, this is at Carolina. So I'm just curious, what caused that move? What's the sudden surge in Raiders' confidence that has come from this? And I'm thinking it's more the other way around. I feel like by and large, the handicappers feel like Carolina might be kind of weak. They're not sure if this coach is – any decent, and they might overall have a pretty limited roster. But I got to tell you, in this situation, I feel like Carolina is the only one I would take. I'm still not sure the Raiders on opening day as a road favorite is where you want to go.
Yeah, and I mean, it also goes to the whole traditional betting aspect of when the West Coast teams travel across the country, it's not in their favor for them to cover the spread. And I would like to know why it flipped so much before really the public got out and spent money to change the line. Because, I mean, Bridgewater's not terrible. I mean, if Drew Brees called it quits, he probably would have taken over that role. He's in a good position to replace, not that Cam Newton played at all last year, but, step into that role. And you have one of the greatest offensive weapons in the NFL with McCaffrey. He could run. He could come out of the backfield on a little – screen passes. I expect a big game out of McCaffrey, and I'm not going to lay 3. I'll definitely be betting the Panthers in this one.
Right. So moving on to another game that will be of quite a bit public interest because this will be the first one in the New England post-Tom Brady era after, he spent 20 years there. Just crazy, how long he's just been the face of the franchise. But he moved on, and Cam Newton in his place, and we know the Patriots actually had a whole lot of veterans opting out, so they're going to be shorthanded in more ways than they imagine. And you take on the Miami Dolphins, who actually expected to be in a bit of an upward curve. We saw them improve late last year, which up to and including a win in New England on the final day of the season, where New England actually had some incentive to win. They would have had a first-round home game, or a first-round bye, I should say. They still ended up having a home game. So there was actually stakes on the line, and the Dolphins went in there and beat them. Of course, they then drafted Tua, quarterback, and they made some other transactions to try to bolster the depth where needed. They got one of the running backs, Matt Breida, from San Francisco. And generally speaking, supposed to be on the rise here. And Tommy, I want to say, I feel like even seeing this, spread inside 7 for the Patriots at home might seem unusual without ever having seen Cam Newton take a snap for New England yet. And the way the Dolphins were on the rise, I'd only take the points in this one.
Yeah, I think the Patriots, and not just talking about, Brady being gone, they just lost too much. Too many veterans decided to opt out. Do we trust Cam Newton? I mean, I know Belichick made him a captain, which actually speaks volumes. But still, 6.5, if that goes to 7, 7.5, I'm all over the Dolphins in this one just because defensively the Patriots weren't there, and I think with the addition of Breida, I know they're going to try and get Tua into that starting role at some point, but he's still got a decent quarterback. Why am I drawing a blank on his name right now? Fitzmagic. So you're either going to get, just amazing out of him, or he's going to throw 9 picks and they're going to lose by 40. But I don't think that defense is ready to intercept him 7 times.
Right. So another AFC East game here, which might be of some interest. So Patriots Dolphin is curious for all the variables that presents here, but you got Buffalo Bills and New York Jets in another AFC East matchup with the Bills -6.5 and a total of 39.5. And this would be, one of the games for me that draws the least amount of interest. I mean, how do you trust me? The Bills had that breakout season, and lots expected for them to kind of be the team that might end New England's run, kind of dominating the conference. And we know they came alive last year with real solid defense, and Josh Allen made some plays. Yeah, a quarterback, whatever, is a little bit erratic, but he did show still some game-changing, athleticism, and they actually got some production from other guys as well. They're considered basically on the upswing here. It's 6.5-point favorite, but the Jets are always kind of sticky, and I don't think I want any piece of this one.
I'll probably stay away from it as well. However, I do like the addition of Stephon Diggs going to Buffalo. Give Allen another weapon to hit downfield, and that could be very interesting. And I already think the Jets are experiencing a little bit of that turmoil with,
Adam Gates
and some other key players on their team, especially Le'Veon Bell already, leaves the practice early and then sends out some tweets. And you can't have that in a clubhouse, especially when you don't have the fans there to pump you up, and the team's got to do it and the coach has to do it. If you have that riff in the clubhouse or locker room, it's not good.
Yeah, well, it looks like, there has been tension there, and I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I think Adam Gase is already kind of on the short list of coaches most likely to be fired first in the middle of the season. I think he's right there. I mean, there's a couple others that come to mind. The guy in the Falcons, though, he just seems indestructible. You thought that guy was going to get fired many times, and for some reason, go work for Arthur Blanks. He's the most loyal guy in the business, because it seems you got to do a lot to lose your job there. But we are going to head off to our last commercial break here and go through the rest of the Week 1 NFL slate when we return. So please join us again just a couple minutes on ESPN 94.5 FM.
Now, back to the William Hill Sports Show, live from the William Hill Sportsbook inside the Club Cal Neva.
All right, welcome back to the William Hill Sports Show. Final segment, ESPN 94.5 FM. Again, no Kenny B today, with Josh Nagle and Tommy Thompson with you. We're trying to pretty much speed through this first week of the NFL slate. It is amazing to say that, but we have every single team in action, Week 1. All the circumstances aside, we'll just get to enjoying the games. Tommy, before the break, we went through a handful of them. But moving forward, this sort of curious matchup, a lot of Week 1 games, have some intrigue for various reasons. But here we have the Ravens, who we know kind of dominated the regular season last year, ended up getting upset, in the playoffs with the Titans. But Lamar Jackson, who, just removed from an MVP season, he's going to be back there. And there you are, hosting the Cleveland Browns, who for some reason historically, at least the last few years, the Browns have given the Ravens a pretty hard time. In fact, I believe they blew them out in one of the games last year. So we've got Ravens -7.5 with a total of 48. And you know what? The Ravens are so powerful, it's kind of tough to go against them. If the Browns were at home catching points, I'd be on that side. Right now, I feel like it's a pass, but I might want to look a little bit at the overtime, because I feel like, realize the Browns have done their thing again with a coaching change after Freddie Kitchens, didn't work out for one season. But still, you just wonder, with the amount of weapons at their disposal, if they were able to put that together. I also feel like Browns position players are worthwhile considerations for your fantasy lineups, because between everyone, between Beckham and Kareem Hunt in the backfield, and they're pretty much loaded everywhere, I think the Browns have that firepower.
Nick Chubb.
I kind of like that over. Yeah,
if I were to play it, I would definitely lean towards the over, because I think the Browns absolutely underperformed last year. And maybe it was the fact that everybody in the media was like, this is their year, this is the time, it's finally going to happen. They were the betting favorite by the public to win the Super Bowl last year, which, as talented as they were, I still was kind of dumbfounded by that. But this is actually one of Hawks' plays of the week, is the Browns. But I tend to you. I think it's going to be a shootout. I think, obviously, Baltimore's going to score, and I think Cleveland's going to be right there matching them score for score, and it'll come down to a last-minute field goal. So probably Browns and over.
All right. Going on to another pretty interesting early matchup here. You have the Atlanta Falcons, and they're at home against the Seattle Seahawks. Now you realize that's in teams in years past, they've actually had some pretty crazy playoff matchups of note, not too far removed from that. The Falcons have been a bit of a downward trend the last couple of years, so they're trying to get back on track, and they were really, for the most part, poor last year, erratic. They improved, though, as the season went on, and toward the end of the year, they were playing all right. You know, some would say, whatever, never been the same since they lost the Super Bowl lead against the Patriots a few years back. And, I guess there's an argument that could be made because it really does seem like they haven't quite competed at the same level. But they've had personnel turnover like every other team. We know the Seahawks have had their own share. It looked like they were sort of blowing up the team a couple years ago, got rid of the whole pretty much famous defensive unit that they went to two Super Bowls with, and yet they're still kind of right there. So they decided to build a little bit more on the offensive end with Russell Wilson, some offensive line and playmakers around him, and go a little thinner. And that's really all it was, that their entire salary cap was dedicated to defense during the Legion of Boom era. It was like Wilson and not much else on offense, and they decided to change that. Now they have explosive receivers like DK Metcalf, who was a rookie last year. They're going to have more weapons to deal with. But so Tommy, Seattle comes in there -2.5 favorite with a total of 49. And again, I think it's a little tough. It's tough to know what you're going to get from Atlanta in this spot, but just at first blush, I would consider the over. Again, I do think it'd probably be a shootout of sorts.
This goes against everything I just talked about in the previous segment with the Raiders going across the country. I really, really like Seattle going into the Dome, playing against a Falcons squad that their last five week one home games are 1-4 against the spread against their opponents. So I like to kind of take that little trend into consideration. And it's just a better team, a better coach team. Like you said, the fact that Dan Quinn is still the head coach of the Falcons is mind-boggling. He should have been let go the year after the Super Bowl loss. So that's actually, the Seahawks is one of my plays that I'm going to be giving out at the end of the show. So Seahawks all day.
So cool. So moving on, here's a matchup we often see. It's a Thanksgiving-style pairing here because you got the Detroit Lions at home. They're -2.5 against the Chicago Bears. I believe that was the exact matchup on last Thanksgiving. It's hard, again, to me, it's hard to know the Lions. The Bears took a step backward last year. The Lions were a major disappointment, but they had a lot of injury issues. The Lions -2.5, under 42.5. I would say from what we know of it, though, Tommy, I would take the Bears. I mean, I still think they're probably the better team. With Stafford healthy and all that, they give a little bit of a nod to the Lions. But another thing I'm really hoping from the Bears, because, they picked up Nick Foles, but still apparently went with Mitch Trubisky as the starter. I'm hoping Trubisky has a huge year. Because, that kid takes so much grief that it's not his fault. All the Mahomes and Watson thing, how many hundreds of times on Twitter, everywhere else, you have to be reminded, look who he got drafted ahead of. It wasn't his fault. I mean, the scouts and everything, they did the thing where he fit the prototype and he's a All-American-looking kid. They drafted Mitchell Trubisky, and to be clear, the worst bust have existed in the league than him. The guy's just sort of been, hit or miss in his developmental progress. I just think it would be awesome if he just came out and had an absolutely huge year, and I think the Bears win this one.
I'm taking the other side of that. I think the fact that Mitch Trubisky is still under center for them, and I thought for sure
he destroyed
Nick Foles
him last year.
I thought for sure Nick Foles was going to take.
Why would you think that? He was awful last year in Jacksonville.
Yeah, but Trubisky's been terrible since jump. Basically, he's had
he's
a couple flashes
in a couple.
Good games here and there, but nothing that's going to lead me to believe that on the road, opening week one, against a better quarterback, and they're both mediocre teams, so
right.
I'm still going to take the
minus
three.
Let's try to cruise through these games here as we're on the countdown to ending our show with a few minutes left. Okay, Eagles against the Washington football team. I got to say, not much. Again, Washington, Ron Rivera is trying to bring in a new regime there. Then they're trying to rid themselves of everything but the name, to past allegations of toxic environments around the franchise. Who knows how that's going to go for them? Eagles historically have been, you know, kind of overrated the last couple of years in terms of the expectation versus the spread. 5.5 could go right around the number. That's a pass for me.
Pass for me.
Yeah. So let's keep going here. We've already seen Chargers, Bengals. You have the curiosity being Joe Burrow's first pro start after number one draft pick out of LSU. The Bengals are home dogs +3 against the Los Angeles Chargers. Total of 42.
2 minutes.
To me, that would be a pass also.
Yeah, no interest in that except for just to see how Joe Burrow's doing, but in a betting aspect, not at all.
All right, and sort of the marquee matchup of week one here, this would be the primetime. National game of the week starting at 1:25. You got the Saints again, first Tom Brady game in a Bucs uniform. And all of us probably had to see that before we believed it, but it's going to happen. Saints at home -3.5 with a total of 48. Again, I'm just curious on all levels to see how this plays out. I think it will be a shootout, though. Yeah, airtight spread 3.5. It just shows the endless respect they have for Tom Brady there. To be honest, Tommy, though, like, we'll see what happens. I hate to sound like such a public schmo talking about overs, but again, I can't see 28-24 at a minimum. I think this thing flies over 48.
I agree. I think over is definitely the play here. I also hate the spread of 3.5. The last seven years, opening week one, the Saints are 1-5 against the spread, or 1-6 against spread last 7 years, and 2-5 straight up. So.
All right, so we'll just run through the other ones real quick. Niners -7 against the Arizona Cardinals.
Take the Cardinals.
Cowboys, Rams. Cowboys -2.5 at the Rams, total 51.5.
I like the over in that one.
And then we have your Monday night doubleheader, which is Steelers, Giants. Giants +6, total 46.5. And the very last game, Titans, this was actually started as a pick'em. The Titans are now -3 with a total of 41 at the Denver Broncos, who actually with Drew Lock, they're supposed to be much improved. But the Titans, fresh off the AFC title game, and they re-signed Tannehill and Henry. It's actually a big game for them. They were shut out at Denver last year.
Yep, I'll take Steelers and Titans in that Monday night two-teamer.
All right, well, that was your rapid wrap-up of the last week of the first week of the NFL season. Join us again next week, please. Same time, same place. William Hill Sports Show, ESPN 94.5 FM.